It's the Security Weekly News, episode 277, which is a fine prime number. It's Friday on the week of 26 February 2023. We've got human brain bots grown in a petri dish, CISA decider, Black Lotus, Mustang Panda, X22, Dish, and the amazing Aaron Leyland, and more on Security Weekly News.
This is a Security Weekly production for security professionals by security professionals. Please visit securityweekly.com/subscribe to subscribe to all the shows on our network.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week, your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
How is your business staying one step ahead of cyber criminals? Secure your email, applications, network, and data with Barracuda. Protect your business and go from zero to security in no time flat. Whether your team is working in one location or many, Barracuda has solutions that are easy to buy, deploy, and use. Learn how Barracuda can protect your business against ransomware, phishing, and other cyber attacks. Visit securityweekly.com/Barracuda. That's securityweekly.com/Barracuda. Barracuda, your journey secured. All right, I'm Doug White, and it's the Security Weekly News. CISA in the United States released a new tool called Decider, which asks guided questions about attacker activity and then helps you to place the activity into the MITRE ATT&CK framework. CISA said they determined that mapping things into ATT&CK, which is you know how it's spelled with a, yeah. As you probably know, and you've probably tried to do, can be complex. So when you're trying to dissect an event or whatever, and you want to put it into ATT&CK to look at mitigations and so forth, it's a little complicated. And CISA went on to say that stakeholders they communicated with either did not know how to start mapping or were unsure if they were mapping accurately, which sounds pretty true to me. So basically this tool asks you a series of questions about the event and then, tries to categorize it. And it also has a search tool so that you can try to find correct components of the ATT&CK. So a pretty interesting thing if you're dealing with MITRE ATT&CK, maybe something worth checking out. We had talked about the new cyber strategy document with Derek previously. The U.S. government's been working on this for quite a while, and they've been leaks, and they'd shown it to people and so on. But they finally released it. So it was released yesterday morning in the United States, and it stated that it seeks to create fundamental shifts across two areas. One, broadly moving responsibility for insecure technology from the users and small businesses to the manufacturer. I don't know how that, and this is a strategy document, so it doesn't have to tell you how you're going to do that. It just says you're going to do it. The second one was that compelling more long-term investments in technology, in the way that technology is designed, built, and secured. So two big, broad strategy statements about their mission. The ultimate stated goal in the document was to change a status quo where, quote, a single person's momentary lapse in judgment, the use of an outdated password or an errant click on a suspicious link would not be the end of the world. So basically, they're trying to figure something out here. The document does include beefing up regulatory standards around cyber for critical infrastructure sectors, dismantling the IT infrastructure used by hacking groups, and pushing to reshape laws that govern liability for data loss, insecure software, and other products, and forging greater partnerships with international allies to defend the vision of a free, open, and safe internet around the world. I feel like Aaron Sorkin wrote that part. But the document goes on and flags China as the, quote, broadest, most active, and most persistent threat. So one thing you need to remember, though, that despite all the talk about this strategy document, it's not a law. It's not even an executive order. It's just a guide to where the executive branch of the U.S. government, that's the presidency, would like to see things go moving forward. So it's like, here's what we'd like you to do. Doesn't mean that'll happen. The document, it's already being criticized by Republicans and, of course, being praised by Democrats. One side said, my word, the king has gone mad. The other side said, dear heavens, the king has not gone mad. Both sides then agreed to eliminate all taxes on anything plated or solid gold. I might have made that last part up, but,
I might be confusing it with British Parliament too, but I don't think so. Black Lotus is a UEFI boot kit, and the developers have improved it with secure boot bypass abilities. Yeah, I'm like, really? That sounds bad. But they've improved it, apparently, with secure boot bypass abilities, which will allow it to infect even a fully patched Windows 11 system. So Black Lotus is apparently the first UEFI malware that can avoid secure boot. So if you don't recall, UEFI, of course, is the component which acts as the interface between the hardware and the operating system. So that gets loaded first on any system as it starts up. So this is actually coming off the chipset and is loaded. And if you watch Paul's Security Weekly, you know Paul is very into this and writes a lot of blog entries and things about it. Secure boot is a component that only allows certain things that have been hashed and approved during the boot up process. So unsigned things can't get loaded, which is supposedly going to protect you from things like UEFI boot kits. But UEFI boot kits that can get around that can then inject themselves into the boot up process. And that means that it's really hard to deal with them because you can't get rid of them. Every time you reboot the system, they just load themselves in again, and they're good at hiding and so forth. Well, Black Lotus first emerged last year and was being sold for $5,000 per license. It's a really tiny malware, as most any kind of UEFI boot kit would have to be, because if you have anything very big, it's not going to load. So you got a really small little piece, like 80 kilobytes, and so it just sits there. So ESET went on and confirmed that the new version can indeed bypass secure boot, and they released that this week and said that it's leveraging a vulnerability from last year, but that even though that vulnerability has patches, they're still able to use that vulnerability to get in. When the installer gets run, it loads all the files to the EFI system partition, which on Windows machines is that little piece that Windows sets up to put, you know, all of its critical stuff in, and then it disables HVCI and it disables BitLocker protections. So really nasty. Once that all happens, it then reboots the host so that it's automatically loaded and installed and it's running at the kernel level, which is really, really dangerous. There's a lot of detail in this article if you are interested in UEFI boot kits or you want to know more about how this thing works. These things are pernicious. I might even say pernicious, as my friend Lou always said. And this one appears to be more dangerous than most of the UEFI boot kits we've seen. So there are proof of concepts out there with it. ESET has proven it, so it's definitely something to worry about. Mustang Panda is not an Eric Clapton song. Actually, Eric Clapton didn't write that song either. Mustang Panda is a Chinese advanced persistent threat espionage hacking group, and they have been using a new Trojan called, I have no idea how to say this, MQ-Stang. I don't know. If maybe there's some funny way to say it that I'm not picking up on. MQSTTANG, Mkustang. Anyway, I have no idea. But the group tends to target organizations worldwide with data theft attacks, which use customized versions of PlugX malware. They've also been called Bronze President. Who makes up these names? And I want one. Maybe I can be Pasty Host or something like that. But the new malware does not appear to be an update of their previous tools or other tools that were out there. So it seems like it's a new custom Trojan. ESET, again, discovered this malware in January of 2023 when they found a campaign that was targeting government and political organizations in Europe and Asia that focused on Taiwan and the Ukraine. So obviously, you know, they've got some specific interests in mind. The typical distribution of this, of course, is via a spear phishing email that has the payloads, and then the actual payloads get downloaded from GitHub repositories that are controlled by a user who's previously been associated with Mustang Panda. An executable that is compressed in a RAR archive usually has some kind of name that has a diplomacy theme to it, such as scans of passports of members, embassy notes, etc., that kind of stuff to make people not pay attention to it. The new malware allows for a remote shell, which of course can be accessed, and then takes actions to check for debuggers or other monitoring tools that can actually take defensive actions to get around these kind of things. It does adapt depending on what kind of machine that it's on. So it's a very, very dangerous Trojan, and it has been being used in, this is a new campaign. So who knows where they're going to go with that, or if you're going to see it pop up in other places in the future.
In the same light, Exfiltrator 22 is a new post-exploitation framework that was created using the leaked source code of some other post-exploitation framework. So it's sort of a meta post-exploitation. I don't know. But it does use the same command and control infrastructure as Lockbit 3.0. So, you know, it's suspicious that it may be involved with that. The marketing for the new frame, and I, you know, it's crazy to me that all these, you know, malware companies now have marketing organizations that are putting out content. But the marketing for the new framework claims that the solution is fully undetectable. Not that marketing ever lies, but, you know, Cy Firma, who was doing the report on this, said that the operators of the framework are likely based in Asia and are interested in building an affiliation program using subscription-based payments, which has been a common model on the dark web. Currently, the malware is selling for $1,000 a month to use it, or for $5,000 for a lifetime subscription. So, you know, they're definitely got the whole gamut of capitalism going there. Customers get a login panel for the server, which allows you to remotely control the malware and collect information from infected devices, update the malware, push out new versions, update the malware's configuration, deploy other things, or create, and, you know, and the desktop allows you to create new campaigns targeting various and sundry groups. X22, as it's known to its friend, includes an elevated reverse shell, file downloading and uploading, keyloggers, file encryption, type ransomware, a live connection to the infected device, elevation of privileges, LSASS credential dumping, hashing, views of running process, and exfiltration of auth tokens. I mean, it's got more features than a new car. So marketing's got, you know, a pretty easy job at it. It apparently can also bypass user access control, create scheduled tasks, and allows for checking group memberships of the existing user. I mean, the whole article read like a marketing brochure for this product. Cyfirma said that the developers abuse Akamai's content delivery network to host the command and control infrastructure. And there's a lot more detail, as if that wasn't enough. There's a lot more detail about this product and how it works and who's using it and so forth in that article. So if you're interested in such things, you should check that one out. Well, the Australian Federal Police arrested a woman in Sydney for allegedly email bombing the office of a federal member of parliament. Now, unlike Ted Kaczynski, an email bombing campaign is exactly what you think. You know, you send them thousands and thousands of emails. And there's certainly in the United States, there have been cases where they phone bomb people's offices that they don't like. And by they, I mean, whichever side you want to talk about, against whichever side you want to talk about, has done this kind of thing. They've probably done email bombings too. But according to the report, this woman sent over 32,000 emails to the minister's office within 24 hours, which shut down their IT systems and prevented the public from being able to contact the office, which I'm like, you couldn't block. You could. Anyway, the police said multiple domains were used and they kept shifting this. And they eventually had managed to send 32,397 emails within that block until they went out and arrested the person. So I'm like, okay, you had all these multiple domain shifts and everything else and they still knew who you were. Like, really? Anyway, the charge fell under the Committing Unauthorized Impairment of Electronic Communications rules, which are a part of the Australian Criminal Code and can carry a penalty of up to 10 years. Now, I immediately thought about scripts that might do this, but according to the report, they believe the woman simply used an email bombing service, which, are widely available on the dark web. And again, I went and looked at some of that. I was like, wow, this is just turning into a whole commercial business here. So yeah, you can just simply subscribe to these services and they use, obviously it wasn't a very good one they used since she got caught. But nevertheless, there are multiple of these things and I didn't even make real effort at it. I just quickly searched and it was like, oh yeah, here's a whole bunch of them. So I don't know how reliable they are if they'll just take your money and disappear. But you know, I'm always nervous about stuff on the dark web. Dish TV had an outage last week as its websites, apps, and other services became unavailable. Dish is famous for having those little dishes that you see on people's balconies and things or on their rooftop eaves all over the place. Speculation of this was that the satellite network or satellite TV network had experienced a cyber attack. On Tuesday,
Dish confirmed in an SEC filing that it was indeed targeted in a ransomware attack. The incident was first announced on the 23rd of February, and on the 27th of February, they found that data had been exfiltrated from the IT systems. They said it is possible that the continuing investigation will reveal that personal information was lost in the breach. Bleeping Computer reported that Black Basta was behind the attack. I don't know how you say that either. Black Basta is linked to a Russian cybercrime group called Fin7. So the original story said they did not know who was taking responsibility, but Bleeping Computer had some further information on it. So if you're following such things. Well, as a child, he loved to frolic in the vast pineapple fields of Ireland, where a lunch of mashed pineapple and fried saveloy flavored the air with that well-known teriyaki scent you know of when you go to Ireland. Please welcome the Big Irish Kahuna, live from the Big Island, Aaron Leyland.
Hey, Dr. Doug. When I was talking to you on Slack yesterday and you were going on about Irish pineapples, I've had to do absolutely everything in my ability not to Google it, especially not on my work computer, because I'm actually scared what it is. But strangely, pineapples keep coming up in the world at the minute. It's like, if you ever do any form of internet dating, although I know you don't,
oh,
maybe
God.
The production staff do, but there's a load of ethical non-monogamous advertising on dating sites these days. And what is it, the correct word, polyamory or
non-polyamory? Polyamory, yeah, that's what
polyamory,
that is.
Polyamory,
yeah.
Is that the old word for it? So the new word for the woke kids is ethical non, I can't even say it anymore.
But ethical anyway, non-monogamy.
It has something to do with upside down pineapples.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I was afraid of that, too. But that whole thing came up because of Dole being based in Ireland was where I got that. And there was a story on Tuesday, and it was about Dole. And for me, I know Dole does other stuff, but for me, like, Dole was Dole pineapple. And when I found that they were based in Ireland, which, of course, is meaningless in terms of what they actually do worldwide. But I was like, Dole is based in Ireland. It was like, you know, I never thought about it like that. And I'm sure they've been bought. But that was where the whole pineapple thing came from. But yeah, my recommendation would be, if you ever see anything involving dating and pineapples, run. I mean, that does not sound like a healthy relationship. Yeah.
Run towards it?
I'll leave it up to the viewers to decide whether that sounds appealing or sounds incredibly painful. But you decide, and probably shouldn't Google that anyway on Urban Dictionary, because no telling
what
it will say.
I'm actually in the market for a girlfriend at the minute, so if we have any...
Okay. Welcome back to Dating Security Weekly. We have here a fine young man from sunny old Britain who likes to...
I'm not so sure, a bit back to what we were actually talking about.
Okay, sure, yeah, you should probably do your story.
And it was something like, you know, harvested, I'm just going to make up countries, in Jamaica, packaged in Switzerland, and distributed in Ireland type thing. It's like pineapples getting all the air miles.
Like jerk chicken that's got jerk chicken with Gruyere sauce is being sold all over Ireland.
That sounds like a favorite of mine, and as I've just been snowboarding recently, I'm all over the cheeses. Right, I better get into this, because I've got 4,000 words and apparently 63 pages of teleprompter, so I'm going to bang into it very fast.
All right, please do.
It's literally, this is a reminder for our viewers and listeners, but it's also what us, I think myself anyway, as cyber professionals in quotation marks, I actually air quoted myself there, how cool am I? This is what we should be teaching our family and friends, and maybe a special area towards the older people in our lives that weren't brought up, more brought up with abacuses than computers. But yeah, let's smash into it really quickly. So I'm going to talk really quickly on this. So what you should be telling your family and friends to help them stay safe online. Firstly, obviously, or maybe not obviously, protect your email by using a strong and separate password. Cyber criminals can use your email to access many of your personal accounts, leaving you vulnerable to identity theft, So why is it important to take care of your email password? Well, we'll obviously know this, but maybe your friends and family don't. So we're often told that passwords to access our online accounts should be really strong and not to use them anywhere else. Obviously, this is especially true for the password for your email account. If you've used the same password across different accounts, cybercriminals only need one password to access all your accounts. I guess maybe if you want to look into that deeper, have a look at password spraying and things like that, keep you interested for a deeper dive. So always use a strong and separate password for your email. That is a password that you don't use for any of your other accounts, either at home or at work. This is a pain. Like when I was first on the internet regularly in 1995, I literally had a single word with a capital first letter and a number at the end, and that was everything. And not that I was caught up on this one, bringing it back to dating, but when Ashley Madison got massively pwned, they got a lot of data from that, and there was a lot of password sharing, and adversaries were able to run amok through people's other accounts by getting their password from another vendor. Okay, so if a criminal can access your email account, they get it, access private information about you, including banking details, post email and messages pretending to be from you. Actually had a security cleared staff member who spoke to a person on the internet. It moved to Skype. It might have moved to a bit of nudity. It might have moved to a bit of bribery. And the person said that if you don't give me, say, $500, £500 or something, I'm going to post this video to all your friends on your Facebook list. And they did. So everybody got to see little Billy's little search and search. But lucky enough, Billy came out and told the security clearance people. And he never got had to pay out anyway. But reset all your account passwords and get access to all your other online accounts. Having a strong and separate password for your email means that if cyber criminals steal the password for one of your less important accounts, they can't use it to access your mail account. If you use a single password across the board, it's really easy for an adversary to write some sort of script that'll go through all common and uncommon websites and try your email and password, and chances are you're just going to get pwned that way. The UK's NCSC encourages people to use password managers. We'll talk about that in a minute, which can create strong passwords for you and remember them. Generally, I have my password managers use about 64 characters, upper, lowercase, special characters, which probably takes, say, current technology about a trillion years to hack. But then you have to worry about your password manager getting hacked, obviously. So there's a weak point always, but we do our best. If you have reused your password, email password across other accounts, change your email password as soon as possible. It should be strong and different to all accounts. They all should be strong and different. Okay, I'm going to repeat it again. Ideally, you should use unique passwords for all your important online accounts. Not important, all your online accounts. And then we'll look into providing additional protection by setting up, this is called many names now, two-step verification, 2SV, or multi-factor, or two-factor. We'll talk about it in a minute anyway. So always set up two-factor. So even if they know their password, then there's a further step, and that step, although possible, maybe by social engineering or something like that, that is possible to hack in a way. I'm just going to share my screen really quickly because it seems like an appropriate time. If we look at the website, Have I Been Pwned? It's a pretty famous website in InfoSec terms. And for those that don't know, the P is there instead of the O, as that is a common sort of people's typo. Instead of pressing O for owned, they do a PW search, where that's came from. But this is a really interesting site. go on here with your email addresses and even now phone numbers. And just here, you put in the email address that you want to check up on. This is actually an email address I use when I'm signing on to Wi-Fi in a cafe or something so that they don't spam me. So let's see how much this one's been pwned. Just click here and see what's, oh no, pwned. 113 data breaches and 14 pastes. And if we look through here, probably some big names. There's Audi. Oh, a bit of a daily quiz one. Domino's, there's some big names. But there we go. Many, many, many times has that email address been pwned. Okay, we move on. Next, we should look to install the latest software and app updates. Applying security updates promptly will help protect your devices and accounts from cyber criminals. You should apply updates to your apps and your device's software as soon as they are available. This is what we talk about when we talk about 0 days, and they talk about whether 0 days are actively being used in the wild. Most of the time, they're not, but the updates come out. And then if you're updated, you're normally golden pony boy. But if you haven't updated and you forget the update, this is when 6 months, 8 months, 10 months down the line, you haven't made this update to this 0 day. And many weeks or months later, somebody's finally started using the vulnerability in the wild. And that's when you get pwned. So updates come out, aggressive patching, get them updated as quick as you can, as quick as possible. Okay, so updates include protection from viruses and other kinds of malware, and will often include improvements and new features. So if you receive a prompt to update your device, which while I've been talking to Dr. Doug before the podcast, my computer wanted the update twice, and I was like, please don't happen during the show. Hopefully I've staved it off, but if I disappear at any point, you'll know that I find that updating my applications and software is more important than being on the air on a live recorded show. So if you can turn on automatic updates, then you don't have to worry about remembering about it. So updating your device may take some time and requires a reliable internet connection. Obviously, Elon Musk's trying to take care of that for us, but so it's best to do it at home where you can access your Wi-Fi and keep your device plugged in. Older devices, as I found the other day with, quick story, I had an iPad Air. I gifted it to my sort of daughter who was 7 or 8 at the time. She was very happy with it. And then I bought myself, I'm going to make up numbers now, an iPad Air 4, very happy with it, used it for many things. And then she come to me, daddy, I can't play Animal, whatever it's called, Crossing anymore because it's has to be over iOS 13. And this only goes up the iOS, something below that. So we did a swap and I've ended up with an iPad Air 1. More or less can't receive any updates and is a bit like a doorstep. Okay, so older devices will eventually stop receiving updates. So keeping your phones, tablets, and computers up to date, and you'd literally just Google this stuff, it'll come up really easily. So if you try Googling things that you have to consider, iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, Mac computer, Windows computer, Android devices, and a lot of this, as we say, we can turn on to do automatically, like Android does it automatically, Apple devices do it automatically. Not always do smart devices do it, or maybe even a lot of smart devices, why they're all on botnets, actually can't receive any updates. But just refer to the manufacturers and they'll tell you how to do it. Obviously, popular devices that you should think about is Amazon devices, Fire tablets, Kindle e-readers, Alexa devices, Fire TV, Apple Watches, Fitbits, Garmin devices, Google Nest or Home, Ring doorbells. I probably most of us have some or many of these. When the device no longer receives updates, manufacturers eventually stop providing updates for older devices, like my iPad Air 1. So that obviously, if they've stopped receiving updates or the higher iOSs, they're chances are they're more easily compromised. Okay. You don't need to buy the latest, but actually, I'm sure I had a look. If you look on the Apple website, they actually say if you buy the brand new Apple iPad such and such, we will, I'm just going to make up a number here, we will look after that for 4 or 6 years, and then we will no longer do that. So if you're buying a secondhand device and you think it's a really good price, maybe it no longer receives updates, or maybe in a year's time it's going to not receive updates, which means it won't be as safe, or probably not as safe. But what it also means is that chances are some of your applications that are on that device will just stop working because it won't work off the most recent or more recent iOS. Okay. As I alluded to before, turn on two-step verification. And it's like when I was in Vegas and I was at Black Hat and DEF CON, I was talking to this Uber driver, and she's like, oh, you at the big conference? And I was like, yeah. She's like, so do you know stuff about hacking and stuff? And I was like, not really. She's like, do you have any top tips? And I was like, remember and Google two-factor multi-factor authentication, as this will save the day more often than not. So you need to, it says here, right, I wrote, you should protect your most important accounts, such as email, banking, social media, online shopping. Everything, in my opinion, everything that has two-step verification and its many other names is, get it turned on. Get it turned on. So how it works, obviously, when you set up two-step verification, you'll be sent a PIN or a code, often by SMS or email. Then you need to enter this PIN to provide, to prove that it's really you. And since it's presumed only you and not the cyber criminal will receive that, obviously with some sort of phishing and that, there's always ways around these things. But at the end of the day, two-factor authentication can save the day, and it makes it harder for the adversary to compromise your accounts. And that's obviously good, right? So there's two different types generally, and instead of entering a PIN or a code, you may be able to biometrics, fingerprint or face scan in the app. Your iPhone seems really good at doing that. And you don't necessarily need a mobile phone to turn on two-step verification. Some organizations will let you use a landline number or a separate smart device as a card reader. I think in the UK, Windows security unauthorized changes blocked. Something bad is going on my laptop that I'll have to look at after this. My HSB bank over here, they used to have little card readers rather than having a sort of more high-tech digital. And in fact, Danske Bank, mine, had a little credit card thing with about 100 PIN numbers on it. And that was a very low-tech way of doing it. So the important thing is, no matter what you choose, it'll only take a couple of minutes to set up. But really, really, really get this set up. And if you don't know about it, Google it and learn all about it, because it will save the day. And just look at the manufacturers on how to set that up. And they normally come with quite good instructions. Okay, next one, password managers. I love a password manager. Love a password manager. But am I really good at using it? Not as good as I should be. So if you need help remembering all your passwords, get a password manager, or some of the advice is save them to your browser. This is possible. To me, it's not normally the safest way. I've seen more compromises of people's browsers for stealing passwords than I have password managers. But at the end of the day, we're just adding to our cyber hygiene. We're just looking at sort of making it better. It's never perfect. It is never perfect. So obviously many of us have lots of online accounts, so creating different passwords for all of them and remembering them is really hard. And that's where a password manager can help, and it can store all your passwords securely, so you don't have to worry about remembering them. And this advises you to use unique, strong passwords for all your important accounts rather than using the same password for all, which is bad, bad, bad. So password managers can synchronize your passwords across your different devices, making it easier to log on where you are and whatever you're using. And also in the background, they can spot fake websites, which will protect you from some phishing attacks. And a big one that's always getting me is your password manager will bubble you, will tell you, oh my gosh, Aaron, why are you using that password on many websites? You should know better. And it often harangues me to change them passwords, which I'm getting better at. And also, going back to the have I been pwned, some password managers now will actually tell you if your account's been pwned and it's been released to the web. Many of them work across platforms, so you can use a single password manager would work for your iPhone and your Windows desktop. I've put in a top tip here. Remember that if it's free, you're the product. Me, myself, I'd rather spend a few dollars for a product than have it for free and worry about what they're actually doing in the background. So saving passwords in the browser if you must. When you're logged into your accounts, most web browsers, Chrome, Safari, Edge will offer to save them for you. At the end of the day, this is safer than having one password for many accounts. So go for it. If you're not going to use a password manager, maybe use Safari or Chrome to save your passwords. Okay. But make sure you're always using the latest version of the browser and your operating system and your patches are up to date, because if there's any zero days or vulnerabilities that come about, hopefully they'll patch them in time before you get pwned. Okay. Saving passwords on shared computers. Don't do it. Don't do it in the browser, especially. So if you have a computer in your household, either with family or housemates, then you should think twice. At the end of the day, your passwords are saved in there and people can get onto them accounts, and that may be for nefarious reasons. So what you could do to make it better, if you have to use a shared computer, is create a local user administrator account in Windows, set up users, guests, and groups on Mac. Obviously, use your password manager, so you have to sign into it. Make sure you sign back out of it. And the password manager might actually be on your phone or something like that. I have a bit in here that says there's lots of different password managers, many of which are free, but that does give limitations. So it's worth searching for online reviews and maybe speak to friends. And in my mind, if you pay a few bucks for something, it's better than paying nothing and you being the product. Mac OS, I'm not a Mac OS user, but I believe they have keychain manager system built into the operating system. Okay, if you have a password manager, you have to protect it, because at the end of the day, it's the keys to the kingdom, isn't it? It's important to take steps to protect your password manager for the following reasons. If you forget the master password for your password manager, you will not be able to get back into your accounts. If a cyber criminal accesses your password manager account, they will have access to all your accounts. So with that in mind, two-factor authentication, and choose a strong master password to control the keys to the kingdom at the end of the day. Make sure you install updates for your password manager when you're prompted. Next one, very important. I fell foul of this when my iPhone got stolen in a rock mosh pit and I didn't have all my data backed up and lost some important data. Sometimes it's just some photographs. Sometimes it's your private passwords to your cryptocurrency. But anyway, that caused all sort of problems. So making sure you can recover them important photos, documents, personal data. I'm sure we've all come across this problem and we've all banged our heads on it. So making backups doesn't take long. A lot of new technology makes it very easy for you. And as well, there's normally an option to pay a couple of dollars. In my mind, that is normally better. So a backup is a copy of your important data that's stored in a separate being the key word here, safe location, sometimes on the internet in cloud storage, and sometimes in removable media, if it's your private keys for your cryptocurrency. I suggest keeping it in a more low-tech version. But then again, make sure you don't lose that low-tech version of where all your private keys are. Okay, once you've made a backup, if you lose access to your original data, you can then store it. Most backup solutions allow you to choose what data is backed up, whether that's just documents and photos and videos or entire contents of your phone, blah, blah, blah. As a rule of thumb, you should back up anything that you value, anything that would be an inconvenience to you, and for whatever reason, if you can no longer access it, your life might fall apart. So there's many reasons for it. It will help if you have a new device for copying files across. It will obviously help if your device is lost and stolen, or even if it breaks. Or you somehow, I guess, a bit of ransomware and your device is accidentally, the storage is deleted or encrypted, and viruses. But I suggest getting in amongst the cloud or some USB storage, but the cloud's pretty good these days. And if you look at products from Apple, Google, or Microsoft, they're all over the cloud. At the time of writing this, Apple iCloud provided 5 gigabytes of free, Google Drive 15 gigabytes, Microsoft OneDrive 5 gigabytes. So if you want any more than that, it's normally only a couple of pounds for doubling it. And I'd get family members in amongst this and show them how to use it, because if you lose your baby photos or your wedding photos, or they could be gone forever, and just having a backup of them will just make sure that you're happy and not sad with a big sad face that you lose it. So then you're more likely to have a recent copy of your data. If you do it automatically, you don't have to remember to make the backup, so automation is good. Automation for me is normally always good, because being a bit ADD, I forget things quite a lot. Okay, when we're talking about passwords in the olden days, passwords were so easy and then they were so difficult. So a lot of time we talk about things, instead of using a really complicated password with uppercase, lowercase, special characters, think about something like 3 random words. And that should be, if we do it properly, long enough and strong enough. Weak passwords can be cracked in seconds. The longer and more unusual your password is, the harder it is for a cyber criminal to crack. A good way to make your password difficult to crack is by combining 3 random words to create a single password. And an example, aeroplanes, deception, manager. So it would be 3 words that don't normally go together. Otherwise, in people's brute force password dictionaries, they probably have words that normally go together. So something that's not super relevant to you that you couldn't find by a bit of social engineering. So, but you got to remember this at the end of the day. So 3 really good strong words, or even 5 good words that you're going to remember, might be a good master password for your password manager. So in the olden days, and a bit of NIST here, they were like, it needed a certain amount of capitals and small letters and numbers and special characters. But if you want to swap them out, like a PASSWORD, and you do a PASSW0RD, and then a, like a question mark or an exclamation mark at the end, attackers know this, so in their big password files, they will put things like this in. So it makes it a little bit more secure, but it makes it not impossible to guess. And we don't want them to be able to guess. So 3 random words and or 5 random words, I just all about the security. As long as you remember them, that's the main thing, so you don't lose your passwords. Your password off all your passwords, because that could turn into a very, very bad day. Okay, quickly, I'm just going to move into something that's been quite prominent in my mind recently, with spring coming up and summer coming up. There's lots of festivals on. A lot of these festivals post-pandemic, they're sold out. So a lot of people are getting caught out on being scalped by scammers on bank tickets. So a couple of top tips to help you not get scammed. So if attending the biggest sporting events, festivals, and concerts part of your vacation plans, it can be a bummer to find out that the ticket deal you scored is a scam. After all, you're making a hefty investment to be there, and oh my gosh, having things got expensive. But it can really burst your bubble if the tickets are sold out and you want to try and get some tickets. So ticket scams are more common than we realize. According to a report from CNBC, roughly 12% of American adults report having bought a concert ticket that was, in fact, a scam. That is a lot of people. Scams happen when the ticket prices are through the roof or the tickets have sold out mostly. And this is ways to stop you getting scammed. Scammers take advantage of enthusiastic fans, keen on seeing their favorite singer or band. Fans are desperate to get inside and grow impatient, terrified that they might not get in. And this creates a sense of urgency. If you also look into social engineering, the way great social engineers manage to get you to do something is they create a sense of urgency and you stop thinking and you're like, and it falls into the scammer's flavor. So it gives them a perfect opportunity to sell you a fake ticket that won't get accepted at the event. So scammers use tickets as bait to steal your personally identifiable information, PII. But more, well, no, I don't know, is it more important? But also your cash. So therefore, they tend to sell fake tickets. The scams are highly prevalent for popular plays, sporting events, and concerts. A big one at the minute, Download Rock Festival in the UK at Donington Park is in its 20th year, and I can't even remember the last time it sold out, maybe 10 years ago or something. But this special 20th anniversary, it's post-pandemic, it's over 4 days instead of three, Metallica are playing, and it's sold out. So I'm on many, many sort of social sites where people are just, you can openly see them being scammed in front of your face. And I can't be there all the time to help them. So hopefully we can all help our family and friends. Buying tickets online is super easy and convenient, duh, but you must know the risks involved. Here are a few things you can do to ensure you're safe. Buying tickets safely from private sellers. If you're considering purchasing tickets from a private seller, make sure you identify some potential red flags. Check out the ticket's authenticity to help avoid getting scammed. Find out what the tickets look like, and it may be tricky to tell a fake ticket apart from a real ticket, but be sure to look at the details. For example, do not buy a ticket that doesn't include a seat, row, and block details. You can also call the event's website. I actually did this the other day, or box office to confirm the ticket's authenticity. Avoid offers that seem too good to be true. We know the old adage, if it is too good to be true, it normally is. If someone contacts you first about selling tickets, has a price too good to be true, and this is a big one I'm going to show you in a minute, has a very low follower count, then it's most likely a scam. Scammers prey on your desperation and offer you the impossible. Oh no, Security Weekly says no signal. Have I gone over my time? Production's cut me off. Never wire money or send money through to a third-party service. Once you wire the money in, it's unlikely you'll get it back. Also, if you ever find yourself pressured by a seller to wire the money, it's probably a scam. Never give away personal information. Giving away personal information such as your credit card number can put you at risk of fraud. Obviously. Okay, buying safely from ticket reselling websites. People commonly these days turn to resell websites, and they are good and they're generally good. But oh my gosh, have the fees got ridiculous. And I've seen even higher than 10%. And when you're buying some tickets now for $400, I've seen like overhead fees for $40, $80. But at the end of the day, do you want to be sure that you're definitely going to get the tickets and pay that 10 or 20%? Or are you going to go private and have a higher chance of being scammed? You can check on some of these if the seller has any negative feedback, although they probably set up a new account as soon as they do. And pay attention to the ticket prices. Keeping tabs on ticket prices will help ensure you're getting a fair deal. get a receipt. Having a receipt helps you prove that you bought the tickets. So if you ever lose your tickets, using a receipt can help get into the event. So where to report, this is good. No, if you're like, oh no, I've got into pressure, I bought some tickets, I really, it's a scam. We'll look into some ways of recovering sort of your money and reporting it. If you met the seller in person and you know what they look like, just go to the police. Easy. And you can look in America. Did production say something there? Okay, no problem. Nearly done. And I'm getting chopped off. Okay, so talk to the State Consumer Protection Office and the online complaint system within the Federal Trade Commission. I'm just going to scroll down to some interesting stuff. On money transfer application like PayPal, never send the money by friends and family as you will not have any protection. Always use goods and services. Also, never use a debit card for purchases as they offer little or no protection. Always use credit card where you can as the suppliers are regulated to help the customer, and free advice. And always pay off your credit card responsibly. Don't get me in trouble for saying using it. Okay, I'm just going to share my screen quickly and just show you some good and bad, and then we're done. Oh, right. So this is actually on very recently on a Facebook site I'm on, and someone come up and goes, hi, I'm in need of 5-day camping tickets. And they're like, yes, we have two left. I need two, £320 each. And then they're already offering a discount, £600 for both. And then a weird one here is if you look at that Gmail account, myamc1nty3@gmail.com. To me, that doesn't look very good. It just doesn't look very real. And if we just go on into this, they're pressurizing for money. Can you make some payment now and I'll reserve the tickets for you? And then they come in again, you can make payments once first, and that's fine. So that's them putting in the pressure. If you look at this one, and this is you look on social media, this is a good one because they will have lots of photographs, they'll have lots of content, they'll comment in lots of groups. Chances are that Facebook will have been set up more than very recently, maybe even way back to 2007, 2008, and not really recently. So this looks like probably a good one. And this one looked like a good one. They joined 2008. They're married. They're Scottish. Does that make them better or worse? But then if you have this one, this is really locked down. There's very little information here. There was no posts. And they were selling the tickets. I would go further to look at before I bought them tickets. And this is another one that doesn't look very good, as they only have 33 friends. And they seem to be scalping for lots of things. So good normally looks good. If your spider tense is tingling, there's a good reason for this. Bad normally looks bad. Signs bad can include very few friends, joined social media sites recently, joined the fan page they're selling on very recently, not many photos, not many posts. And another one, sometimes I say, okay, if I buy the tickets off you before I purchase them, can you just add me on your private social media just so we're going to have a little scan through? And then after we've done the tickets, you can bang me out. And if they say no to that, I'm normally like, well, I'm not going to risk it then. Let's move on. Okay, back to you, Doug, in the studio. Sorry for going on very long. It's very, very important, especially with summer coming up. It's very important to us as cyber professionals that we teach our family and friends not to be stung online. Back to you in the studio with your pineapples, Dr. Doug.
Thank you, Aaron. That was interesting. I think you broke the record that time. And finally, while you may be scared of ChatGPT, or you may love it, but why stop there? New organoid intelligence is coming. This new field harvests cultures of brain cells that they're going to grow from stem cells in a petri dish. I mean, I think there's an International Universal Picture about this very thing somewhere, maybe like The Crawling Eye or something. But since humans are better than AI at processing information and learning, this paper, which appeared in Frontiers in Science, argued that we should focus on what they called organoid intelligence. How could that go wrong? William Gibson must be kicking himself for not coining that term. But the Frontiers supercomputer at my old lab, Oak Ridge National Laboratory, exceeded human brain computational capacity just last year for the first time. And I think I was drinking scotch and watching old Ren and Stimpy reruns at the point. But it did take a million times more energy than a human brain would have needed for the same computation. But so, you know, let's grow some cells in a petri dish, pump about 1.21 gigawatts into them and see what happens. Combine it with some Boston Robotics dogs equipped with flamethrowers and mouths full of bees, and what could go wrong? The missiles are flying. Hallelujah. And that's the news. Thanks, Aaron, and we'll see you next week on the Security Weekly News.